Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Friday, March 3rd, 2017. Dr. Nyman wanted to go over some things about some of the misconceptions out there and whatnot, and I think some other things. But Dr. Nyman, welcome back to the program, and what's on the agenda for today?
Oh, thanks, Ryan. I thought it would be worthwhile to kind of give a review of the media, actually, without necessarily naming names. Just let our listeners Google and find out who the names are. On their coverage of the Tamiflu resistance and the high path avian influenza, the H7N9, that's currently in China and has also been exported to Taiwan. And this is a pretty straightforward story. It's very straightforward. But you know, as I mentioned on Wednesday, after the presser by WHO, that the data was kind of presented in a accurate, factually correct, but highly misleading manner. And after that podcast Wednesday morning, a number of media stories came out, and they basically used the information at the presser to write their stories, and they all pretty much said the same thing, that 7% of the H7N9 in China, based on the public sequences, were Tamiflu resistant. And unfortunately, they didn't really clarify that 7% of the human sequences from H7N9 are high path, and all of the high path were Tamiflu resistant, and zero of the low path were. And this was particularly annoying because it was a WHO presser. It included the WHO director in Beijing, and almost all of these sequences were actually submitted to GSAD by WHO in Beijing prior to this presser. So they had submitted 60 human cases from LOPATH, all of which did not have Tamiflu resistance. They had two cases that were high path, both of which were Tamiflu resistant. And they had seven environmental sequences that were high path, which didn't have the Tamiflu resistance. In addition to the 69 sequences that they have recently released, all of these were released. The high path were released on February 20th, the low path were released on February 25th, and the presser was on March 1st. So these were all at GSAD. They were all public. And prior to the release of these sequences by WHO, the first sequence that was released was by the Taiwan CDC, and that was from a business man who had gone to Guangdong province and had returned and developed symptoms. First were mild, then were severe. When they became more severe, he was H7N9 confirmed. That full sequence was made public, as he said, by the Taiwan CDC, and that patient subsequently died. He was a 69-year-old male. That was followed a couple days later by the lab in Guangzhou in Guangdong province, and they released sequences from a 57-year-old male, and that patient also died. And both of these sequences had the same polybasic cleavicite that had been characteristic of high path avian influenza, both in H5 as well as H7, although the H7 N9 has never been reported to be high fast. So there have been A7 high fast previously, including the major H7N7 outbreak in the Netherlands in 2003. But this was the first time there was H7N9 that was high fast. And it was the first time that such a sequence had been isolated from a human. So the Taiwan sequence was, in fact, the first public sequence. And even though the traveler was from Taiwan, he was affected in Guangdong province. And then the first sequence from mainland China was also from Guangdong province and had the same plebiscite, although the sequences were significantly different. So it wasn't that there was one sequence that had recently expanded clonally. They were fairly different as far as the actual lineage was concerned. But in spite of that difference, they both had the Tamiflu flu resistant marker in the N9, the R292K. And they both had the mammalian adaptation in the PBT gene, the E627K. A few days after these two sequences were released, the WHO in Beijing did release the nine sequences that were high path. Two of them were from humans. And these were all released on February 20th. The two human cases came from one person, a 43-year-old female, who was also from Guangdong province, but a different location than the two prior sequences. So this represented the third location in Guangdong province. And she actually recovered. Her sequence also has the same polybasic plebiscite and also was Tamiflu resistant, but she didn't have the E627K, so her viral load was probably not as dramatically increased as the other two who had the mammalian adaptation. She recovered, but then WHO came out with a report and noted that she was part of a cluster, and her older sister, 45-year-old female, had also tested positive for A7N9. There wasn't any information about the sequence other than the serotype. But it's assumed that that was also high path, and her sister also died. So that would represent three deaths out of four cases. And then the other sequence that was released by WHO was initially said to be a 56-year-old male, was on the 20th, the next day, the characterization sheet was changed to a 57-year-old male, and the location of that case, based upon the cases that have been cited by CHP in Hong Kong, matched the same location as the 56-year-old male that had been released a few days earlier. And those sequences were virtually identical. In fact, four of the gene segments were identical. There were no differences. Three of the segments differed by a single nucleotide each, and the eighth segment only had two differences. So these two sequences either came from the same individual or had a common source because they were so closely related. And WHO had this case is listed as not being dead, but still alive, at least as of February 22nd, in critical condition. And that was actually reiterated in the presser that the case was still hospitalized, even though the earlier sequence indicated that he had died almost certainly by the time of the collection date, which was January 17th. And if not by the collection date, then certainly, I'm sorry, January 14th, by the time the sequence was submitted to GSAD, which was on the February 19th. So in either of that prior to the WHO announcement or prior to the WHO presser, this patient was stated under status as being deceased in the characterization sheet. So and then as I said, on the 25th, WHO in Beijing released a large series of sequences from LOPAF cases, and actually 60 full sequences, and they were all LOPAF. They didn't have the polybasic cleavage site. They were recent. They were collected between the middle of November to the middle of January, so they were November 2016 to January 2017. So these were all from this so-called fifth wave of H7N9. They were widespread. They were in northern China. They were in southern China. They included Guangdong province. And they were all LOPAF, and they all were Gamma-3 sensitive. So it wasn't that just treatment with Tamiflu gave occasional Tamiflu resistance, that the low path were treated with Tamiflu and they remained sensitive. The high path were treated with Tamiflu and 4 out of 4 were Tamiflu resistant with the identical change at position 292 and the N9 gene. So, or the N9 protein. So it was a pretty straightforward result that the Tamiflu resistant rate in the published sequences from human high pass cases was 100%. It was 4 out of 4. And the rate in the low path was 0%. It was not found in the 60 sequences done by WHO Beijing, and then a few sequences were also released by the CHP in Hong Kong from residents in Hong Kong who had been infected in Guangdong province. And those sequences were also sensitive, and those sequences were also the low path. So it was, low path sequences, even from patients that were treated with Tamiflu, did not have resistance, regardless of whether the sequence was generated by Beijing or CHP in Hong Kong, whereas the high pass cases did have Tamiflu resistance, and those 4 sequences were generated by 3 different labs. The WHO in Beijing did 2 of them. The lab in Guangzhou province, Guangzhou, which is in Guangdong province, had that, and the CDC lab in Taiwan also had it. So 3 different labs from 4 individuals in 3 different locations all found the Tamiflu resistance in the high path, all of which had the same polybasic cleavage site, and 2 labs that had released sequences from recent cases showed that none of the low path had Tamiflu resistance, even though the number released was, I think, 62 or 63 sequences. So it was a very straightforward difference, and it was somewhat discouraging that WHO would call a press conference and say that 7% were Tamiflu resistance, and not note that 7% were high path, and that all the high paths were Tamiflu resistant and none of the low paths were. So that distinction wasn't made at the presser, and then part of the reason we're doing this podcast is to report that, not surprisingly, none of the media reports on the situation of H7N9 in China noted that the high paths were can be flu resistance. And most or all of those media reports did cite the 7% Tamiflu resistant figure, which was quite misleading. And unfortunately, since WHO has submitted the sequences, they were well aware of what the distribution in the human cases were, that the resistance were in the high path and not in the low path. It would have to fall into the deliberately misleading statements at that presser, which were then spread worldwide through various wire services that basically came out and characterized the situation by saying that there's a 7% Tamiflu resistant rate and it's only in cases that were treated with Tamiflu, ignoring the fact that none of the low path cases had Tamiflu resistance. It was only in the high path. And that was a critical difference, and that's why we held a podcast at the end of the presser on Wednesday. And following up this morning, so listeners can actually confirm for themselves that this is indeed what the situation is. As he said, I did start a thread this morning, and that thread it's a few tips. It's a pretty straightforward title. It's called Media Myths on Tamiflu Resistance in HPAI H7N9. It started with a brief explanation, had a link to the podcast on Wednesday morning, and then I did screen grabs of the sequences as he said. This doesn't have the actual sequence, it just has, a list of the name of the sequence, its ID number, what its subtype is, and then it's got the sequences as well as the size of the sequence. I did the screen grab because it's just copy and pasted. It doesn't necessarily give you the full columns that are on the screen. You can't quite read it. This has the size, and it actually has the collection date also. So you can see the name of the sequence. It's isolate number, and then how it was passaged, and what the size is. Now, the ones I put up initially that has these 60 low-pass sequences, you can easily see which are which by just looking at the size of the HA, and all 60 of these have a size of 1683. And then you can see the 7 environmental ones, and they all have a size of 1695 because they got 12 additional nucleotides because they have a polybasic cleavage site. And the two human sequences that also are 1695, the two human and one of the environmentals are full sequences, so you can see the size of all 18 segments, and you can see the collection dates. And this list was generated by simply searching GSAD for H7 sequences that were deposited by WHO in Beijing. So all of these sequences that are on these six different screen grabs, actually, because of the limitations in how many are displayed at once, all came from the WHO lab in Beijing. And I started to put up some of the characterization sheets, which, again, don't give the actual sequence, but do give the information about each isolate as to when they were collected and who actually submitted them, and names of authors, and that type of information. And so you can kind of confirm, at least for the ones that I showed the characterization sheets, that all of these were generated by WHO in Beijing, and you can see when they became available, as he said, for anybody that had an account and a and a password could actually see this. Much of this actually was posted when the sequences first came out, at least for the high pass. So the high pass has been covered previously. The sequence for the case from Taiwan was discussed the day it came out. It came out last Thursday. I guess it's two weeks now. But in any event, it came out in the morning, and the sequence was up in the afternoon. And the fact that it was high path was quite obvious, partially because the size was 1695 instead of 1683. So there were definitely 12 additional amino nucleotides that were present there. And then the other sequences, high path followed, and all the high path sequences have been posted of various threads under either Taiwan or China for avian influenza, and they're always 7 and 9. And so all of that data was posted well in advance of this presser, and the high path aspect has been covered on multiple podcasts that have been posted at recombinomics.co, and they were also discussed on the Jeff Renz show that night they came out. So they basically were released in the morning. It was a Thursday morning. It was the third Thursday of the month, so it's the time of my monthly update on the Renz website. And so the timing was good. It was supposed to be an H5N8 discussion and switched over to H7N9 because it was a pretty undramatic development. High pass H7N9 had never been reported before, and this was a case that was exported. And that's kind of the worst case scenario of a country where the first report of the disease is not made by the country, but made by a visitor to the country that brought the disease back to their originating country. And so Taiwan really was the first one to report this high path by virtue of releasing the sequence, although they didn't really comment that it was high path until a few days after the sequence was published. But, you know, as I've said many times in the past, the story's in the sequence, and the sequence is pretty straightforward. Unfortunately, most of the media does not look at sequences, and in this case, they relied upon the WHO presser for their information. They didn't seem to, I don't know how aware they were or how aware they weren't, but they certainly didn't include the obvious segregation of the Tammy flu resistance into the high path. They did not report that in their media report. So the general public that has read about the situation in China knows there's H7N9, and most of them assume that there's a 7% Tammy flu resistance. And H7N9 in recent human cases, and that fact is actually correct. It is 7%, but that's obtained by combining the 100% four out of four sequences that are high path with the 62 low path sequences, and basically taking four and dividing it by 66 instead of dividing it by four. And you get 7%. So 7% is a real number. And if you ignore the fact that 7% of the human sequences out there are high path, you kind of come up with this number, which is, again, accurate, but highly misleading. So I thought it was useful to give another update after these media reports have come out, and that kind of led me to start this thread on the media myth, because none of these reports, or at least none of the ones I've seen to date, have noted the fact that all of the Tamiflu resistance is in the high path cases. And it's not just treatment with Tamiflu brings this out, although it's not in the birds, but that's almost certainly due to the fact that it's a mixture, so it really is in the birds, but it's not obvious until you start treating with Tamiflu, and then that kills off all the sensitive virus. And then the resistant emerged, but they emerged very effectively, and that's why 4 out of 4 are Tamiflu resistant. And the low path are treated with Tamiflu. That's very common for H7N9 cases in China to be treated with Tamiflu. And in spite of that Tamiflu treatment, at least all of the sequences that have been released so far from this fifth wave are sensitive, and they're not limited. You know, it's throughout China. So there's these 60 sequences that were released by Beijing were collected throughout the area, or at least eastern China. So they go up to the provinces in the north as well as the provinces in the south. And looking at the screen graphs, you can see where those are. As most listeners know, the influenza sequences are include the geographic origin of the isolate of the sample. And you can just kind of read through the sequences from Beijing, WHO Beijing. They give the province as a geographic indicator. So you can just go through and there aren't that many provinces in China. You can just see the name of the province where the virus was and have a pretty good idea of where it was. And you can see the collection date. You know that these were relatively recent. And so it's a pretty comprehensive list on the low path. And even though they released 60 sequences from throughout the country, and most of these cases were assumed to have been treated with Tamiflu, none of them had this marker. And the two sequences generated by Beijing, the other sequence by Guangzhou, and the sequence by Taiwan, all four of those do have the same marker, and they all have the same polybasic cleavage sites. So that's the quick update. It's a pretty dramatic story, and the fact that it's been told as a media myth by major newspapers, I think is probably a story in and of itself, and that's the reason I started this thread and thinking we'd do an update on the podcast.
Okay, well, thank you for the information. Listeners can always go to recombinomics.co for all the latest information, again, which is updated all the time. And we'll do some more updates as the situation unfolds. And thank you, everyone. We'll see you on the next edition.